Okay, well, basically this is a talk about the application of chiral perturbation theory to twisted mass lattice QCD. And for this audience, I'm just going to say just a very little one slide about the present status of the alternatives, because we all know and have talked a lot about that. And we've already heard from Isfan about what is twisted mass lattice QCD and why it's interesting, so I'll be fairly quick here. So the bulk of this talk will be explaining how you can include the discretization errors in the chiral effect of Lagrangian, no doubt returning to points we discussed on Monday to some extent. And then I'll show you some results and answer the question in the title. Okay. Okay, so, all right, well, this is stolen from a talk which has had a more general introduction, so, and I won't do the rah-rah thing so much.
Maybe we should have a comment set.
Yeah, right. Okay, we've got a lot of computer time.
In Britain, right?
Yes, that's right. This was stolen from one which started off, actually, the first version was in Liverpool. It's gradually changed, possibly improved since then. Anyway, we now have the chance to start doing... unquenched simulations with small quark masses, and we've already heard lots of results from improved staggered fermions about that, with that. And then we have now, as we should always do, to think about the light fermion action again. So let me just remind you, this is only one slide, so hang in there. What are the possibilities? We have good old improved staggered fermions, which are the fastest, but they have the fourth root problem. We have slow, but the ultimate choice of chirally symmetric or almost chirally symmetric fermions, but they're the slowest. And so if you, for whatever reason, don't like these, because it's not a field theory, to use Chris's expression, but we can't wait for this, what do you do? Well, there's the old standby of Wilson fermions. You know, we know how to improve it. That's straightforward, but it's proved to be very slow. And computationally slow. And also, to improve it, you have to improve every operator. It's very painful.
So the slow is an improvement, because otherwise twisted mass and those fermions are the same thing.
Yes, right. So to separate this from this, it's a bit of a stretch, but anyway. For the point of today's talk, this is with an untwisted mass, and then the new kid on the block is twisted mass. And we heard at the last lattice conference from Tony Kennedy, who had a nice slide showing that maybe twisted mass is as fast as staggered. Anyway, it's comparable, it seems. But it's a new kid on the block, and so there are investigations, one of which we heard. So in my mind, the issue is we have a period of time before we can really do this. It would be nice to have something which could check the results from this, given that they're phenomenologically interesting. Okay, so let me just, I had previously a slide for each of the types of fermions. You only get the twisted mass one today. I'll tell you again what it is in a little bit, but let me just give you an overview of what's good about it and what's not good about it. Okay, well, the first thing is what you see is what you get. You put in two fermions, you get out two fermions, no extras, no roots of determinant. It's completely kosher theoretically. As we said, speed comparable to staggered. Then, at a particular value of this twisting parameter, as Istan already described.
What do you do with the strange?
Okay, the strange, maybe you use Wilson or something. It's heavy enough, it's not a concern.
Right. I was starting 2 days ago, and the first slide was a doublet with unequalized quarks. So I would propose to put the same quark in such a doublet.
Which arm?
With chart, yes. I mean, or with chart or with infinite mass.
Oh, all right. That was naive. I was thinking nobody wants to put a chart near there.
No, so then okay, just
an odd number of quarks. So that's why I want to
give one of the mass in the doublet, in the speed doublet, and infinite mass, meaning mass of order one in lattice units.
But in any case, we can do many things to the strange. It's not an issue.
Is that better than just putting the strange
you have,
in
you have
another
the same
way?
Improvement, so to say, this order A improvement is exactly the same.
Even when you send one of the quarks, you don't recognize.
Not clear. Okay.
That I don't mind. Okay.
Okay. Let's move on. Let us move on.
I think the proof, you are right. I think it is even in that case, but the proof holds only if all the fermions, or two of them, are physical. So in that case, for you, you can do the chart quark.
Okay. I don't care about the strange quark. It's heavy enough that I don't think it's a big issue. Yeah. So I'm only going to be talking about two flavors today. So as we've seen at this magical parameter of maximal twist, the twist angle of pi over 2, Frizzotti and Rossi argued that order A errors vanish automatically. Don't have to do anything, don't have to improve the operators, don't have to improve the action. So it's fantastic. And also that the operator mixing is like in the continuum. The disadvantage is that for away from the continuum, you have explicitly broken the flavor symmetry. And this remains to be investigated how big an effect this is, and that's one of the motivations, because we can investigate this explicitly. We've already heard that this is being studied intensively numerically, and we're going to use analytical methods to study its properties. Okay. This is for Isfahan. And I'll show you this again later. So before diving into too much detail, as Isfahan was saying, this is a contour plot of the results from the chiral perturbation theory calculation on axes of the untwisted mass and the twisted mass, mu. Okay? So roughly speaking, this is GeV. Okay, I've adjusted things, so this is 20 MeV, and so on. Okay, and that's, so these are parameters roughly tuned to match the simulation that Isfahan did, actually.
So my circle was at 35 MeV,
yeah.
So this is already
right. So, right. So if there were no lattice artifacts, then these contours would just be circles around the central point. This is what the effect of lattice artifacts is. So you can see the circles actually get squished into ellipses, and their center moves as the mass moves. And then this funny business here is because of the phase transition that he talked about.
Apart from the funny business, I don't want to be nasty if I change the scale from the horizontal axis. I get circles.
Fine. Okay. Analytically, they are actually switched. Okay. Fine. Yeah.
You want to renormalize. But the renormalization prescription is not real.
It's compatible. If you look at different lattice spaces, of the same scale.
Yes.
Anyway, so this is the, if you want, summarizes what we can do. We can write down analytic forms so we know what to expect. And there are parameters in those forms which I've roughly tuned to match the data. So Isfahan showed some plots where he was at mu equals 0, and he scanned in untwisted mass, so along this axis. And then he also showed some plots for mu equals 0.01, which is roughly close to the top. I've chosen the parameters so that it's close to the top. Okay. Now, and you can see that m pi squared versus m quark has a different slope this way and this way. That's the order A effect. I've set it up to match what you saw. Okay, the ultimate thing of interest in twisted mass is to come in this way, straight down. And the claim is if you do that, if you come in straight down here, then the order A terms are absent, and it's only A squared.
Except it may not be straight.
Yes, that's not, there is, as you go out, there will be some curvature, which, as you'll see in this talk, will be higher order than I consider.
With respect to quarkness, if you look at the slope of n pi square, the slope will be different between these two areas.
Right.
And in that case, the slope means the Kyler condensate. So can you interpret the slope of the n pi square over n q as still the Kyler condensate?
Well, so what it is the chiral condensate times 1 plus A times lambda QCD. And over this side, it's the chiral condensate times 1 minus A times lambda QCD. So if you came down this way, it would be the chiral condensate times 1 plus A squared times lambda QCD squared. So this is just showing lattice artifacts. The fact it's different on this side and this side is just lattice artifacts.
Somewhere on this graph, if you were to keep going, behind your back there is the velocity, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there was causing this bending.
Right. That's actually this way, right?
Oh, I think this way.
No, because you have to go to negative mass to get to the zero point.
Oh.
And you keep going and you get the
negative mass to be that way. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But there's somewhere
out way over there, right. Anyway, sort of cute to see. So we'll get to see how you can get this picture after quite a while. But I wanted to show you something pretty to start off with. Okay. So I'm just going to consider the simplest case of degenerate quarks. This time, consider the more general case, and I'll use the convention of twisting in the tau 3 direction. So you won't see any tau 1s or tau 2s here. Okay, so let's start off in the continuum just to get our thoughts clear, because we think we understand things. So here is the twisted mass action in the continuum. D slash plus mq times e to the I gamma 5 tau 3 omega. Okay, and I can just work this out. And there's an untwisted and twisted component. That's the convention for the names. And this is just simple geometry. It's always good to keep this picture in mind, because we'll see various variants of it. This length is mq, this is m, this is mu, and this is omega. Now, a maximal twist will always correspond to omega equals pi over 2, so straight up, no untwisted component. Now, if you looked at this naively, you'd say, we're breaking flavor and parity. That's a fake. You can remove it by doing a non-singlet axial transformation, like so, equal rotations on the psi and psi bar, and you go to the physical basis where everything looks normal, and you can see that there's no flavor, no parity breaking. So this would be a stupid thing to do in the continuum. We could do it if we wanted. It doesn't make any difference in the continuum, but on the lattice, it does. Okay, let me just flash something to put it in your mind. I'll show you this same slide again later. Because, as Istvan said, on the lattice, we actually work in the twisted basis. And we want, in the end, to get to the physical basis. One of the problems is we have to determine the twist angle non-perturbatively. We don't know what it is a priori. That's why it's such an issue. But the way you get between these bases is just using that axial rotation. And so let me just show you or remind you what the relations between the bases look like. So we'll have the usual axial vector currents, densities, pseudoscalar and scalar. And hat will mean physical basis. So the physical axial current is some linear combination of the twisted basis axial current and twisted basis vector current for the charged guys. For the neutral, it's not affected by the rotation. And for the pseudoscalar densities, it's the other way around. The charged are unaffected, but the neutral mixes with the condensate. So we'll make use of these later. It's worth noting that even though you don't know on the lattice what the twist angle is a priori, you can always create a charged pion using the bare pseudoscalar density, because that's not affected by the rotation, or the neutral by the bare axial. So there's no ambiguity what the physical pions are, because you can use these fields.
The previous thing, you had that e to the I tau omega over 2 gamma 5, which located away the maps. But if I stick that same thing in here, it's going to depend upon whether I'm using 3 or 1 or 2. And when I'm using the 3, it will just drop out.
No, it does exactly what's shown here.
Oh, you got the. Oh, I see. A means 1 or 2.
Yes.
A means
1
or 2.
Okay.
All right. I'm just not being all your transparency.
Fine. Okay. All right. We'll come back and use this later, but just to give you an idea of. All right. Now let's go to the lattice. Okay, this we've already seen. Let me just quickly work through it. So here's the naive derivative term, the bare mass, the bare twisted mass, the Wilson term. Okay, the twist is in the mass, not in the Wilson term. Okay, the point, as Sven already mentioned, is that we can't rotate away the twist in the mass because it shoves it onto the Wilson term. Okay, so we really do break parity and flavor when we stick in this term on the lattice. Okay, let me remind you that with some standard stuff, this Wilson term, naively of order A, in fact mixes with the identity. So this renormalizes the bare mass in the usual way. So if you want to get a physical mass out, you have to subtract off the critical mass and stick some Z in. The twisted mass, however, is multiplicatively renormalized, so makes it nice. This guy can't go mixing with this guy because of the parity and flavor. So this looks just like you want, you say, the staggered or overlap fermions. So when we talk about twist angle here, we mean after doing this additive and multiplicative renormalization, we now define the twist angle in this way, given by this picture. Okay. Oops. Not too far. Oh, okay. I don't want to do this one. That's a quick one to explain why it's computationally better, but I'll just, for today, I'm going to skip that. Okay, now let me try and explain in one slide why it is that you have this magical property of automatic order A improvement. Which is, what does that mean? The claim is just that some lattice quantity approaches this continuum quantity with A squared errors. Now, by the way, A squared errors can mean A squared lambda QCD squared or A squared MQ squared. Now, as we'll see later, I'm going to be working in a regime where MQ is of order A. So for me, this will be too high order to consider. This is the dominant effect, and that's the one I'm going to be able to control. Okay, so here's my attempt at an argument.
This is sort of good for any Q.
Sorry?
This is good for any operator?
Yes, any Q. Any physical operator, as we'll see. So this is the relevant part of the action, the bare mass, the Wilson term, and the twisted mass. Let's say we're working at maximal twist, which means we set the bare mass equal to the critical value. That means you cancel out the mixing of this guy with lower dimension operators. And what remains is something which goes over in the continuum to what you naively thought you would get. Okay, just D squared. So at maximal twist, the effective continuum Lagrangian looks like a twisted mass plus this A term. Well, now you can do the axial rotation to take the twist from here to here. So you go down to, you have a quark mass, which is mu, and you have a order A term, which has the twist on it. So
not exactly.
Well, then, That's the rest of the talk. Okay. Yeah. Don't worry. This is to understand why. Okay. So there are order A errors. We do not get rid of order A errors by this trick. They're there. But they break parity and flavor. So if we consider a physical quantity, like a particle pi mass, for example, then you imagine, you know, you have a state, a continuum state, and you're putting on both sides, and you put this perturbation between it. Okay? It gives you zero. Because physical states, if you have pi plus on one side, pi plus on the other side, this does not connect them. So you need two insertions of this to connect a physical state to another physical state. So simple as that.
Of course, it would bring down the theta.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But that also shows you that if you consider other quantities, for example, if you consider, if you have two pions and you put, say, a pseudoscalar density in between them, that quantity can be non-zero and will be proportional to A.
So things that should be zero can be non-zero in a big way.
Right. So you have two sectors. You have the physical sector and the unphysical sector. One is order A. You somehow magically shoved all the A stuff into the unphysical sector. That's how this works. And of course, the question which immediately comes to your mind is, well, you're not going to be able to tune exactly to this. You know, how close do you have to get? Well, the answer is you have to be able to get to order A. Not surprisingly.
A squared.
A in a certain specific sense. The twist angle has to be pi over 2 within A accuracy. And I will show you how that's no problem to do that. Okay? And that's good enough, as we'll see.
What do mass scale is at A? For that in?
Say it again?
What is the dimension? A is the dimension minus 1.
When I write this? Okay, there's always lambda QCDs floating around here. Yeah, or to whatever power you need it. Yeah. Okay. So I think a very important practical question is what quark masses are you restricted to for this automatic order improvement to work? Okay, so let's just do this is some numerics along the lines that I did, was talking about on Monday. So go through it quickly. All right, so let's consider three possibilities. Most conservative is that MQ has to be much larger than A. Now I've put the lambdas in, okay? So I'll take this A is 0.1 Fermi and 300 MeV. So that means MQ must be much larger than 45 MeV. If that were the case, forget it. Not interesting, right? We want to get down close to approaching a few MeV for the light quark masses. So option B is that you can be this small, but you have to be much bigger than A squared times lambda QCD cubed, which if you work it out with these numbers is 7 MeV. Okay, so that's a bit better. If we had B, then we could hope to extrapolate to the light quark masses. And the third case is that you're allowed to go all the way down to M quark of order A squared, with some bound of order 1 times that. And that's the best case, obviously. So which is it? OK, if you look in the original paper, this is being a bit mean, but I'll do it anyway. What they actually say in the original Frizzotti-Rossi paper is that you need condition A. They were concerned with theoretical matters rather more than practical matters. So they didn't, I think this through. But a naive argument for that, which you might say is reasonable, is you want the vacuum orientation of the condensate to be determined by the quark mass, like in the continuum, and not by discretization effects. So you want MQ effects to be bigger than order A effects. So naively, that would lead you to condition A. As we'll see, in fact, that's not true. Order A effects, by suitable redefinition of parameters, do not at all affect the vacuum. It's only at order A squared that you have to worry about that. So it's easy to see that you...
The same way, so that you get it, no? Because of parity and flavor.
No, well, no. You'll see. It may be still true, but okay, the way I think about it is different. Okay, let's get back to that when we get there. So that gets you to B. Then there was a paper by Aoki and Barr last year arguing that, in fact, this is from symmetries, not from the Carroll-Lagrangian, the more general argument, that in fact there's no limit to how small you can go. So it's condition C with little c equals zero. And what we'll say, what we'll argue is that it's actually condition C with little c of order one. It depends on whether you have an Aoki phase or not. But in the case which we seem to have, where you have the first order transition, you can only go down to the end of the first order transition. It's not a surprise.
But condition A would be then the end of the story, because then you would need the 10 times the
smaller right.
Spaces, so then
right.
You can go away.
Right. But that's actually what they say in their papers. But fortunately, people didn't read that part. Okay. So the way we do this is using the method of matching the lattice theory onto a continuum effective Lagrangian and then matching that onto a chiral theory, where the continuum effective Lagrangian contains the discretization effects to some order, and therefore the chiral theory does too. Okay, so this allows us to study the long-distance physics, the pion properties and the vacuum orientation, including discretization errors to some order. And in particular, we can see the competition between the two. As I said, we're going to just have two light degenerate flavors. And so this is the method laid out in a little more detail. We follow semantic. We write down an effective Lagrangian for the long-distance modes on the lattice. So lattice effects are small, and we can expand them in powers of A. So in the continuum, we arrange things to be QCD. That's how we set it up. And then there are dimension 5 operators and dimension 6 operators. We'll only go up this far. And then having got this continuum Lagrangian, it's straightforward to go to the chiral theory. Okay. And for most of this talk, I'm going to use this power counting, which was motivated by the previous numbers. Okay, we clearly want to be, most simulations are actually going to be in this regime, okay, like Istvan's. And towards the end, I'll actually consider the case of MQ is about A squared. That'll be just throwing away some terms in the Lagrangian and working to only leading order rather than next leading order. So what we'll do is work. So M quark effects will be the same size as AFX. And again, in these sort of equations, lambda QCDs are implicit.
Yeah, so how much? It's 300. So.
Yes. But we'll work to next leading order. So we'll work, you know, so we have P to the fourth, P squared MQ, MQ to the fourth, MQ, A squared, and A squared, P squared, A, P squared. Okay. All right, I'm not going to go through much of the details, but just sketch the answer. So we want to write down, so for this L0, we've arranged things to get the right thing. And I've already talked about that.
I mean, you have a lambda Q to the second.
You want to go back?
Yeah, when you compare MQ to A, if I want to make A into mass units, I have to use two powers of lambda Q.
Right, so that's why I go back here.
No, I'm just asking, it's just a question of sensitivity.
Yes.
So lambda QCD, you make an L by 1.5, it's a factor of 2 there.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's quite
sensitive. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and these are only, these are estimates. I mean, yes. I mean,
yeah. I just wanted to look at
yeah. Okay. So the dimension 4 operators are the ones, it's just QCD. You set it up that way. Okay. At dimension 5, you get a fairly long list of operators, but you can throw all of them away for one of two reasons. One, they vanish by the leading order equations of motion. Or, well, so that's one way. The other way is that they're too high order in our expansion. Okay, And what's left, we claim, is just one operator, the Pauli term. Okay? So remember, L1 is with the factor of A taken out. So it's dimension 5 operator. There it is. It has a coefficient which does depend logarithmically on A. So it's always, you always have to keep in mind that this is not a straightforward polynomial expansion in A. You have logarithmic dependence hiding. Okay? We don't know what this guy is. It's just some unknown coefficient. Now, you might say, well, what about other terms? For example, you can have a twisted Pauli term. Okay. Well, because of the symmetries, the lattice symmetries, what constrains this is lattice symmetries. Whenever you have this, you've got to have a mu. Okay, because they come hand in hand. And when you have mu, by dimensions, you have to have an A. So this term is A squared mu when you put the other term back in. So it's A cubed. It's next to next to leading order. So we don't have to consider it. Similarly, you can write down terms which are of the form psi bar psi times mu squared. Okay, so then I have to put an A in to make dimensions. This is a shift in the critical mass. You can't read what I'm saying here. So, a mass term, but the coefficient is A mu squared. So this shifts the critical mass a little bit more, proportional to mu squared. But in our power counting, this is A cubed. So that says that as you go up from the critical point, it actually will bend quadratically as you vary mu. But we don't consider that because we're not working to that order. Okay. So it turns out that the answer is exactly the same as with Wilson fermions. Twisting has done nothing. Now, we're working to second order, so you need to have L2. L2 is a bit of a mess. It's been worked out. It turns out that it's exactly the same as the Wilson theory, because as soon as you put any twist factors in, you need a mu, and that gives you another factor of A. So it's a whole bunch of 4 fermion operators. It also includes the famous psi bar d cubed gamma mu psi. But none of those things, well, those things give you no additional operators than what you get by using this one twice. Okay, when we work to A squared, we have to put the time order product of this thing squared. This breaks the symmetries as much as you're going to break it. There's nothing new gained, so I don't have to write them down. And the term with 3 d mu cubed, when you convert it into the Carroll Lagrangian, turns out to be too high order as well, because you need 4 derivatives and an A. So really, it's a very simple game. All you have to do is take this effective Lagrangian and convert it into the chiral theory now. All right, well, let me just, this is a very straightforward thing too, because, even though you put a twist in the mass, when you consider mass terms in the chiral Lagrangian, the way you do it is by writing them in terms of a spurion field, which is already the most general thing you can write down. So the only difference is that at the end you set the spurion to this guy and not the diagonal matrix. So the symmetry issues are identical with or without twisting. Okay, and this term, well, it's a left-right operator. It breaks the chiral symmetries, the SU2 left plus SU2 right, in exactly the same way as the mass term. So you can write it in left-right plus right-left and introduce a spurion A. But these terms are going to just appear in exactly the same way in the Carroll Lagrangian. So there's really no new work. You play the usual game. You make the spurions rotate. You see where they can appear, and here's your result. Okay, so this looks not exactly scary, but a little complicated. I don't know what it looks, but it's not so bad. Let's work through it. Okay, so. So sigma is the pion field in the usual way, which roughly corresponds to the fluctuations in the condensate. There are covariant derivatives, so I introduce left and right-handed currents following Gasser and Leutwiler. Chi is basically the mass term, but I generalize it to introduce scalar and pseudoscalar densities so that I can calculate matrix elements. And this A hat spurion is the thing which in the end just becomes the lattice spacing up to some constant. Let me get back to the constant. So this is organized in a sensible way. The top line is leading order, p squared, m quark, a. So leading order, you just have the top line. As I said before, the a spurion, you know, it just reproduces the mass spurion term, just exchange one for the other. Then at next leading order, you have the continuum terms, p to the fourth, two types of p to the fourth terms, p squared, m quark, m quark squared. These funny L6 eta, because in SU2, you can concatenate terms. So this is L6 plus L8 over 2 or something. Okay, then the new terms you get by discretization are p squared a, m a squared. That's it. And they come with new Gasser-Leutwiller-like coefficients, which I've called W's. And there's another one, which is W0, which is the dimensionful constant which comes into proportional to a in this term. So these are new constants, W0, etc., in addition to the ones we had before, B0, F, and the L's. Now, there's this extra term here, which is sort of fun. This is a term with a covariant derivative acting on the spurion. So when you set the spurion to its constant value, the derivative part vanishes, but the part with the currents doesn't. Now, you can, in fact, do a change of variables to remove this term, if you want. And that's why in the continuum there's no d mu chi type term, because you can remove it. But we keep it partly as a check on our calculations. But also it turns out that if you were doing an underlying improved Wilson action, okay, so you did a Clover term, so that in that case your quark effective Lagrangian would not have this. This would be removed, but there would be the a squared times the higher terms. Then the effect of that would be to remove this term, to remove this term, linear in A, to remove this term, linear in A. You'd still have this term, it's a squared, and you'd still have this term, because this corresponds to order A corrections in the currents. If you then went ahead and order A improved the currents, for example, the axial current with the CA term, then you could remove this. But it's logically good to keep it in there for that reason, so you can study the correspondence with different underlying theories.
So in global situation, you wouldn't be able to remove it by change of variables, or?
You could remove it, but it would shove it into one of the other things which you thought was zero, I mean, which is initially zero. So the danger is the order of limits, right? If you naively say, I do Clover improvement, if I first of all remove this term, so it's not there, then I say, oh, all the others are gone, then I find that the axial current matrix elements are improved, which I know they're not. And that's why I know that W10 has to be non-zero in that case. It's sort of subtle.
When you are doing now kind of like a calculation and you calculate some matrix element of, let's say, axial vector current, don't you have to improve this current, or you have to take the inertial current, or is there any prescription which has to be followed?
Yes, the description is as given here. So the axial current is given by taking a functional derivative of this guy with respect to L mu minus that with respect to R mu. And all the terms are in there. Noether is included automatically this way.
Yes, but now if you go to the lattice, then you say you don't have to improve the axial.
Well, this, when you work out, as we'll see, you will find that various of these terms, in particular W10, give you order A corrections in axial current matrix elements, which is what you expect. So the claim is this correctly represents everything about the lattice, including the order A terms and the A squared ones that I've included.
When you do regular Clover improve, you get more coefficients than just CA in your currents. But the claim is that those would be irrelevant in the chiral limit because they're to do with vectors and stuff that you don't care about.
Okay, good question. So here's the answer. So first of all, there's a CV in the vector. The reason that doesn't show up is that when you work out the matrix elements that you can work out from this, like the pion matrix element of the vector current, the contribution of CV is actually higher order than next to leading order. So it wouldn't show up. So that's why it doesn't appear here. There are all these AM corrections, the Bs, but they are all relative corrections of size AM, which for us is A squared, which is too high order. So that's why they don't appear. Thank you. Yeah.
The M by the minus M asymmetries must be hidden in here somewhere.
Okay, well, we'll get there soon, yeah. Okay, so, I mean, basically, that's the answer. Now, this brings up a point which is related to what we were talking about on Monday. What does one learn by, is this different from just taking the continuum guy, so everything up to here, and just putting an A dependence in the L's? And it absolutely is, because the A terms come in with this particular set structure of pion fields. So in particular, when you work out the A squared corrections to the pion masses, for example, then you might think, you know, this term here is just a correction to the leading order mass term. You know, you can think of this term as the leading order 1 times 1 plus W68 over times 4 over F squared times this. Now, if you set sigma to a constant, then that's just an A squared shift. But in fact, it depends on the pion fields. So when you work out the effect of this term on the pion masses, there are pion fields coming from here and pion fields coming from here. And they both contribute. In fact, there's one term where one comes from each. That's what leads to the pi plus pi zero mass splitting. Whereas if you say we're looking at the shift in the effect on the pseudoscalar matrix elements, the pseudoscalar is basically given by d by d chi, so it's sitting inside here and sitting inside here, then in that situation, you just set sigma to its vacuum value and doesn't spit out any pions. And so the effect of this term depends on the matrix element. So there's non-trivial information here, which you just get out by doing calculations. Okay, now let's think about automatic improvement.
Do you think it's because something I said?
Yes, yes.
No, well, let me just... No, because you started by saying something which I did not say.
Good. I mean, I'm glad that I misunderstood.
What I said was, I said on the left, because I was talking about continuum length, there is a parallel tangent. It is restricted but just by the lattice symmetries. All this fact will be there.
But with Wilson, okay.
The way I think about it is just the opposite order, which means, first of all, I don't touch the ultraviolet problem if I don't need. So I just do the symmetries and I do like a chiral Lagrangian.
But can I say some thought? We don't have the chiral symmetry on the lattice, so that is a not. With Wilson fermions, you can't even make that step.
Yeah, that's correct.
So that's why I think you have to do it for overlap. You can. It's very different.
Plus a mass, plusing, all kinds of things that you can write down. You have to. No. Just like in the continuum, you don't have exact axial symmetries, and you still write the chiral Lagrangian. The same logic applies also on the lattice.
There is no point if you work at finite A, there is no value of the parameters where you have the symmetry, unlike in the continuum. In the continuum, the chiral Lagrangian is based on expansion about M equals zero, where you have the symmetries. That's not true.
So with overlap, which is in my mind, yes, then there is a value. No.
So that's why I think it has to be a disjoint expansion.
There is no value. Even with Wilson fermions in the ideal world, forget about exception, whatever crap. You know there is a value. I mean, you believe that you can make the assumption there is an eigenvalue, a particular value which has spells, and you just don't know what it is.
No. But even if you set the mass to zero, the couplings of that pion are not derivative. There is not a place where there's chiral symmetry. So I think you have to do it this way. Okay.
Yes. But what I meant is really
for overlap.
And I know.
Yes. No, with overlap, I totally agree. Okay. Good. I was unable to think clearly on. Oh, sorry. Okay. So Now let's think about some general things before getting into detailed results. So this is the leading order Lagrangian. Okay? Continuum, p squared, m quark, and a term. Okay, now we make a very obvious observation that we can just simply absorb this into a redefinition of this chi prime. That just corresponds to doing a shift in the critical mass. We don't know what the critical mass is a priori. We can determine it non-perturbatively. This is something we never have to worry about it at a computational level. So there's nothing wrong with this. This is this variable here is indeed the thing we would normally call the lattice quark mass. And so you just have to change the variables. And so I've now changed this to m prime by doing this shift. And then I'm going to change this for historical reasons to omega naught. Funny notation. Okay, so from now on, the thing which matters is this m prime. Mu is unchanged by this. And this structure is just exactly the same triangle. Okay, so this is our Lagrangian at leading order. And then it's just exactly like the continuum. So there's no lattice artifacts in the pion theory, irrespective of what the twisting angle is at leading order. It's just exactly described by the same Lagrangian as the continuum. Now, this chi prime will have some twist in it, omega naught, which you don't know, because you don't know where you are relative to this unknown critical mass initially. You're going to have to determine it later. But there is some twist. And then to analyze this, you can see immediately from this potential that the sigma field will just line up in the direction of that twist. If the mass term is this way, sort of the unit, then the sigma is this way. If the mass is twisted, then so is sigma. So then you just put sigma to its physical value, which is, you expand about that. The way you should do it, because it's at the fact it's an underlying axial transformation, is in this funny way here, where you put the condensate on either side of it. Then you plug this in, and you get, for the excitations about that vacuum, exactly the continuum one.
It means, in some sense, that you are doing non-perturbative improvement by tuning the bare mass to the critical mass.
Exactly.
And numerically, that you have to control this numerically extremely accurately, of course, not to reintroduce the parents.
Absolutely. And I'll talk about how...
If you agree, of course, that this is extremely clean.
Okay. So what about at next leading order? We haven't gotten rid of all the order A terms. There are still these p squared A and chi A terms. At this point, I'll drop the W10 because I can put it into the other term, so I don't need to keep it now. Okay, well, I should go through this quickly. It's straightforward to see if you work out what happens with these terms that physical properties receive only order A squared corrections. Let's see how that goes. Okay. But you can couch it in terms of symmetries. It's easy to see that there's a symmetry where you flip the sign of the pion field and flip the sign of the twist angle. That corresponds to doing this. Chi and chi, and sigma and chi prime go to the conjugates. And it follows from that these terms, which are invariant under this change and which are independent of omega naught, are even in pion fields. Okay, I'm going through this. Trust me. Okay. And then the other thing is that the term with an A in it can have a part which is, you can see by explicit calculation, you put in e to the I omega 0 times gamma 5 times tau 3. You're going to end up with cosines and sines. The cosine part, which is even here, must be even in pi's, and the sine part must be odd in pi's.
Oh, so that's right.
Yeah. So if you set omega 0 equals pi over 2, this goes away. And the physical vertices, which have an even number of pions, receive no order A contributions. Okay, now I'm standing here confusing myself. So it happens when you haven't read through something. Where do the odd number of pion vertices come from, you might say? Yeah, but they're there. They're there. The white, how?
You need them from the diagonal of the tilde.
What
did
they multiply by a sign?
So, what is the problem? So, you have this there.
Yeah. So you lost the paper violating order.
Yes. No, okay. Good. No, I said it all backwards. Okay, now I've got it. Sorry. Excuse me. Let me say this again. So when omega 0 is pi over 2, this vanishes. Right? So that means that terms proportional to A will only have vertices involving an odd number of pions, because there's always an even number here and here, and there's only an odd number there. That's the point. Okay, I got myself confused. So unphysical vertices which involve unphysical, even odd numbers of pions are order A, even ones are not. Okay, question?
So is omega 0 is defined, or if I understand correctly, you choose properly a critical.
Okay, let me explain how I define it, okay?
I would not like this definition, right?
Yeah, we'll get there. I haven't told you yet how you're going to get what the critical mass is. Okay, so, okay, let me remind you, we're going to use the currents and densities again, so let me remind you that there's this mixing. Okay, in particular, at maximal twist, the axial current with the one index here is actually the vector current, the two index, and so on. And the pseudoscalar and scalar backwards. Okay. So this is how we determine W0. Okay. There are various ways. The best way, which corresponds to what Isfahan was talking about. Oh, by the way, I'm assuming that we've got the right renormalization constants, ZA and ZV. I'm assuming that they've been figured out. It turns out, as Isfahan showed, you can determine them non-perturbatively. But for this calculation, I'm just assuming they're known. Okay?
Okay, let us be so. Now I understand completely.
Yes.
Nevertheless, I would like to emphasize it again, that this definition is very important if you do partially quenched calculation. Because in a partially quenched calculation, if you any time introduce a critical coupler, then you will mix, so to say, you will have a problem with defining it for the valence quarks and for the sigmas differently. And that's why one has to use a local definition, which is just based on the correlators which are defined in a point and no reference to the critical component at all. You can reverse the thing, so you can say you define it locally, and then you draw a line and this tells you critical coupler, but you never use critical coupler in the definition.
I agree with you. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I am not thinking about partially quenched here, but today. But anyway, the general point is that this is a Ward identity type definition. You say, if I have picked the right omega, then my vector current, my physical vector current, will have no matrix elements with the pseudoscalar density, violates parity and flavor. Okay, so I'm enforcing something which I want to be true in the continuum limit. There's a whole bunch of different things I can enforce. Each would differ by order A. Let's pick this one. Okay, using the result on the previous section, the previous page, it's easy to see that corresponds to this definition, which is essentially already given in Isfahan's talk. So you measure this two ratio of correlation functions. You can actually pick any x and y you want. And clearly, if you want maximal twisting, so pi over 2, that corresponds to setting the denominator to 0. So that's the point. You find the point where the axial current, so this thing which normally you think would be big, that's the big thing, you know, you calculate the pion correlator from it, goes to 0. So that's how you do it numerically, and we'll question how accurately you can do it. We've seen some results. I don't know I don't have anything particular to say about that. That's one definition. There's lots of definitions. Here's another one. Okay, clearly this matrix element should vanish in the continuum. Scalar, something with the wrong flavor and the wrong parity. But it won't vanish on the lattice, with finite lattice spacing. You can turn that into another result. So that corresponds, omega equals pi over 2 in that case corresponds to this guy vanishing. Now this looks like this guy, but this is neutral, this is charged. Okay, this has disconnected components. So this we hand to Chris. In any case, they will not be exactly the same, but they'll differ by order A, as we'll see. Okay, now we can implement all this in our calculation because we can go to very long distances, x minus y, and then the pions will be the dominant contribution, and we can evaluate these. So we can compare these various definitions, and here this is the result we find. So this is through next leading order. So the omega naught, the thing involving the masses, which I don't know because I don't know what the critical mass is related to this omega A, which I can determine non-perturbatively this way. By this equation, there's an order A difference, and it depends on these parameters. By the way, notice this term here is A squared divided by MQ. Okay, that's something which, if I go into the Aoki regime where MQ is of order A squared, this term gets big. And that corresponds to the vacuum getting mucked about a lot by the discretization effects. But omega P and omega A, well, they differ by this, and this is it's just some combination of these W's. And notice this is S. S means sine of omega A. So this is maximal or maximal twist. So this doesn't go away, a maximal twist. There really is an order A ambiguity in. But that's okay, because generically the order A effects go like A times cosine omega, the corrections. If the uncertainty here is of order A, then you get A times A. It's an A squared effect. So it's the size we're not controlling. So being off in the twist angle by order A is consistent with order A improvement. You couldn't expect to do better.
Are there any other choices?
Omega A equals omega B equals omega delta would be another choice.
Oh, you can say, well, you know, you just look at where the pion mass splitting between pi plus and pi zero is at its maximum, as we'll see. That's another one.
What about this little pi plus is minimum mass?
That doesn't quite work because things get shifted sideways a little bit. Yeah.
Apparently, the error you make is not an order A error, it's an error at a fixed A when you do the calculation to do this tuning. What you might want to have is the way to understand how this error might propagate, which might become very complicated because then you would have to do the full renormalization without assuming that you have the exact fine tuning. Or are there tricks to
I haven't thought about that because I mean, the error at a given value of A and is, you know, determined by how many configurations you have, right? So it's not something I can.
Is the shift to the point where the pi max is minimum, is that also order A, or is that?
Ask me later. I have to work it out from the formula.
That's an easy thing to measure. Right?
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's. By the way, so the difference between those two omegas is one of these parity-violating order A effects. Now let me show you just a bunch of results. We've worked out everything you can possibly work out using the Carroll Lagrangian with just pions. So here's the pion masses. Okay. Chi prime is basically this length here, m prime squared plus mu squared square rooted, multiplied by this constant 2b0. So it's the quark mass renormalized in the usual way. So this is the result. It's sort of boring, actually. It turns out that it's equal to, okay, this plus this, m plus m squared plus the one loop are exactly like in the continuum, completely unchanged. And in other words, the loop, the pion mass in the loop is exactly the one given by chi prime. It absorbs the same shift in the critical mass. And so the only A effects are these analytic terms. So it's, in a way, sort of trivial. So you have an AM term and an A squared term. So here, this is the origin. So you think if you add this term and this term together, it looks like the quark mass times 1 plus A times cosine of omega. Okay, so on one side, it's one sign. On the other side, it's the other sign. So that's the source of the difference in slope.
You can even then check, so to say, the magnitude of this.
Right. So you're in your
ratio of the slopes.
Right. Right. Exactly. Now it looks to me like it's about 0.3, and that's not a bad number for A times lambda QCD. So you have determined this combination of W and W tilde. And then there's the A squared term. Now, see, this is just a shift, okay? This is yet another shift in the critical point, okay? Well, similar to that. This says that the, I'm sorry, do I say a shift? Not a shift. It's an offset vertically, right? It says that the mass, when chi is zero, the mass does not go to zero. Okay? What about the mass splitting? Okay, so one of the reasons we got into this was to say, well, how big is flavor violation? It turns out the only physical quantity that we can address and next to leading order in terms of flavor violation is this one, m pi squared, m neutral minus charge, and here's the answer. It's purely analytic, no loop contributions. And, well, it's proportional to this w prime, and it's a squared, and it's sine squared omega, so it's maximal twist, not surprising. So this is what I say. You can tune omega by maximizing this difference. That's another way. Okay. So it'd be nice to calculate this, and Chris is doing it. So it's. Why is it unphysical? It's perfectly physical.
Yeah. No, but wait. It's all an array
split. Right, but this is a particle. It's yeah. On the lattice theory. This is a perfectly good particle. This is a perfectly good particle. It's a physical quantity.
Right. Here, but you want to maximize the order
race. Right, that's funny. So maybe that makes you a little worried. So in this one quantity, getting automatic order A improvement involves making the A squared terms as big as possible.
But it's maximizing and that fixed A as a function of
volume. Right, right. Okay. This is the decay constant. So here it's sort of trivial again. It's the continuum result. Order m corrections and m squared log m, just as in continuum. And then again, you have this a times cosine of omega times some different combination of constants. So if you'd looked at that again, that should have a different slope on the two sides.
This just would mean that if you just fit, then what you don't get out is not L45 or 45, but some
right.
Something plus.
Right, but again, if you did it on the left-hand side and the right-hand side, you took the average. Or alternatively, you just came straight down, you get rid of this. So it just shows explicitly what I argued for general, and you can calculate the pseudoscalar matrix element, the scalar and vector form factors. It's all basically the same thing. Let me point out that with twisted mass, you can measure a condensate non-trivially because you can look at the gamma 5 tau 3 one, and that doesn't mix with the identity. And that guy has similar order A improvements, and if you could extrapolate along the twisted axis down to zero, you could actually try and get this number.
So that means that the f pi k, if you take the dual quark mass, that will go to the physical f. Is that the conclusion? Either side of that.
Well, not if this term is not if this term is there, right?
Right. So can we get a physical f?
Okay, if you go to maximal twisting, so cosine vanishes, then at this order, yes. Of course, there are a squared terms.
But just the taking quark mass to zero doesn't lead you to the physical end, isn't it? It'll have a order A effect, which is.
That's true. Well, that's true with Wilson fermions, right? And unless you go to maximal twist.
That's what I'm trying to understand. Then how can they get the physical end out of it? Is there any way?
Extrapolate to the continuum limit in the usual way.
Oh, A equals zero.
Yeah. This is just showing you how things vary And at this order, all the A dependence is trivial, it's just analytic. I mean, modulo the fact that there are constants, logarithmic dependence buried in those constants. Okay, so what about the unphysical sector? So this is sort of fun. So we can also calculate matrix elements at the axial current between pions and also the pseudoscalar between pions. So we can explicitly see the order A effects, and there are two types of diagrams. Anyway, you just work it out, and this is an example of the results. You get they're proportional to A, as claimed, times sine of omega, so they're maximal twist, and then they have some structure. So in fact, there's a lot of predictions in here. There are 6 matrix elements you can measure. They depend only on 3 independent parameters. So there's actually some checks of chiral perturbation theory that you could get by studying this. None of these are easy because they all, if you think about it, involve connected and disconnected contractions as well. Okay, so I don't think that I need to do that. Now, let me quickly go through what happens in the Aoki regime.
Is there any obvious advantage to working with maximal twisting over averaging positive and negative mass?
I don't know.
Is it both? That's the experiment.
Right.
It seems to be no, which is perhaps not so bad.
I mean, to me, that's a sort of practical question. Once you have the formulae, which show that if you average.
I guess you have to do twice as many simulations that way, but you still got a lot of simulations to locate the.
Right, but in my imagination, you do the work that Isfan's doing. You find out where to go, and then you hit it with a big hammer on the vertical axis.
I thought the computations went a lot slower, negative mass than positive. That's not so.
Yes, that's true. But it's not really, it is true if you are on the Wilson axis. If you go up, which you will do anyway, so you could do the same thing if you are at non-zero twisted mass, you can just always average over the two, and then there is not a big difference.
Right. So, either way, we have the formula for the whole result. Okay, so now let's think about going to very small quark masses, where M quark is of order A squared. And in that case, we have to reorganize things. Okay, we've absorbed the A term into chi prime. Okay, after that, terms which are proportional to M times A become A cubed. And so they're higher order than a straight A squared term. So you might say, isn't all I need these two plus the A squared term? Okay, that's true when you're studying the vacuum. But I have here p squared times a and m times a. These all look to a high order. But these do come in if you want to think about matrix elements, because then you take some functional derivatives and you bring them to lower order. So for the vacuum, the top line is sufficient. When you're talking about matrix elements, you actually need to keep these. I won't go into matrix elements. I'll just talk about the vacuum. But OK, so now we really do get a competition between this term and this term. And that's what we've heard about already in the Aoki phase discussion. It's very easy to see, I think repeating what Mike said long ago, why something funny happens. Imagine we're just still on the Wilson axis. So chi is either positive or negative. Then depending on the sign, it either makes the sigma want to line up this way or this way. This term, if the sign of W prime is one way, we'll want the condensate to line up equally this way or this way. Okay, it'll be like that, a potential like that. Or it may be a potential which goes the other way and wants you to go in the middle. So if it's the one which wants you to go to the endpoints, then as you reduce the mass, you start off like this and then you flip. If it's the one which wants you to go in the middle, you'll just go continuously. That's Mike's banana pictures, if you look at his old paper. So that's the qualitative effect, and then quantitatively you just minimize this. It's a simple thing. And so the ideas go back to Aoki. There was Mike's paper, sort of detailed analysis, and then the generalization of this to the twisted case became a mini industry, and a bunch of people did it. It's a pretty simple problem, and so you jump on it, and we were the last. So there are these two choices depending on the sign of W prime. One thing we have done, which the others didn't, is we extended all those calculations I talked about before into this regime. So we have formulae which work all the way down here. Okay, so the net result is there are these two options. Okay, I'm now scaling everything with a squared. So alpha is the untwisted mass in units of C2, which is basically W prime times a squared. So this is the untwisted mass in units of a squared. This is the twisted mass in units of a squared. So we're blowing up to see the effect. And I'm going to show you, so in this case, this is the Aoki phase. This is where there isn't an Aoki phase. There's a first order transition, but there is a sort of rotated thing. In fact, mathematically, these two cases are identical. They're just 90 degree rotations of one another.
These endpoints that I asked before.
Yes.
That's something becomes massless.
Right.
These are like 5 to the 4. So
right.
So typically, don't you expect new infrared singularities because of the new ultraviolet singularities to long of 8 terms, which come just from the generalization of the effective theory there. This is all the entire formalism is blind to that.
Well, no, I mean, you do get large logarithms, which you would have to resum as you approach there.
The logs of QCD?
No. From the chiral theory itself?
Oh, just the loops of the chiral theory would.
I believe that's what Aoki did in his paper a couple of years ago. I haven't done that here. I've just done the tree level. Well, yes. The tree level analysis. Because we don't want to be near here. Okay? At this.
The question is how far the point impacts.
It's a good question, and there's more work to be done.
I'm not sure how you can do it. That's because the expansion parameter would be the effective 4-point coupling of this theory, but you have no reason to believe that it is small. The second point confuses me. There is no asymptotic freedom helps you nothing here.
I agree.
You have to think now about this effective theory around there and what governs perturbatively if you have a lambda of the 5, an effective 4-point coupling.
Right.
If that's the universality class, I don't know which it is, and you have to be more careful.
But I mean, you do still have the chiral expansion to keep coupling small.
Chiral expansion sort of is bad. The moment you see that it is zero there, it means that it's a bad approximation.
No. Why?
Because it's for the same reason that mean field is a bad approximation, logarithmic corrections.
But we should talk about this afterwards. But
yeah.
I mean, they're actually not mathematically equivalent, because this is one of the last, when I come to point two, I've got Planck symmetry, so I've got three masses times.
Right.
When I come the other way to the top point, it's only one mass.
Exactly. So apart from that one thing, which in fact is a constant shift in the other pion, everything else is the same. Okay. So yes, what Mike was saying is you come down here, all three pions become massless. Two of them stay massless as you go through here. As you come down this way, just the neutral pion becomes massless, and the other ones are not massless, and nothing is massless in the middle.
Okay, so if you take this into account, it makes it even clearer that what all I say would be totally different consequences.
The two cases.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, but I'm not going to address it either. But okay, so let me just show you some pictures of how things look at tree level in the mean field analysis along these axes. Just for fun. Okay, so this is what I'm going to show you is AM, which is the trace of the condensate of the sigma. Okay, along the Wilson axis, the condensate, this is just going in the Aoki case. It just goes, the cosine goes linearly. As soon as you turn on twisting, everything gets smoothed out. You can't spontaneously break a symmetry that you've explicitly broken. And if you look at the masses, this is what we were saying before. So this is on the Wilson axis, the charge and the neutral, the degenerates. And then you go to zero, the neutral is massive in the Aoki phase. You break symmetry, you have Goldstone's theorem, the charge ones are massless. Once you go away, you turn on twisting, everything gets smoothed out. And in fact, if you see these curves cross at 2, 3, 4, 5, and here they cross at 0, 1, 2, 3, there's a constant offset, which you can show. Anyway, and as you go up in twisting, the relative splitting gets less important, obviously. Okay, the other scenario, there's just a first order phase transition. Okay, along the Wilson axis, just jump. The condensate jumps, and you get this V with a minimum pion mass. If you go, this is the picture for at the top of the transition. So then you have this, it's actually continuous, but non-analytic here. And this is what happens to the pion mass. The neutral one dips down to zero, the charge one stays non-zero. The V becomes a sort of rounded out V, and in between, sorry, it's even as you go even higher, then everything gets smoother. There's no transition. This is the crossover. And again, you have this, in these units, a fixed difference between the two, and it's smoothed out. Okay. So, I guess I would, it actually is true that at this order in the Aoki regime, the minimum of either mass would give you the critical mass. So I was, right, because they're higher order, so I, strictly speaking, shouldn't do it. Okay, so that's the end of the results. Let me just show you some pictures. I've already showed you this one. Now we have some more idea where it comes from, but let me show you some other ones. Okay, so I just played around here for fun. I stole various pictures from Istvan's paper. This is their results along the Wilson axis with an improved gauge action, m pi squared against m quark. They don't know what the critical mass is, they're just, you know, doing it as 1 over kappa. And they have these two phases, and this is one, and this is the other. And here I've just twiddled with my W's to make something look roughly the same. So this is m pi squared against m quark. And you know, the difference in slope here is just this 2W minus W tilde. The difference is, in this picture is the order A effects of 30%. So they're totally exactly what you expect. A times lambda with A inverse about 1 GV is 30%. Okay, so I can play games and make things look roughly the same. When you, however, let's see, when you go, this is the same picture when you go to non-zero chemical potential. That's their data. Chemical potential. Twisted mass, it's mu. I wish, yeah. Actually, you can't, it really looks almost the same in the predictions until you get right in there. And then there's this little dip, okay, with a little cusp. Because this is actually running through the transition. There is actually a little jump there. There is a real cusp, it's not rounded out. However, you can see it's asymmetric. It's asymmetric because I cheated a bit. I put in the order A M terms, which is strictly speaking A cubed in the Aoki regime, so as to have something which continuously connects with the expressions which apply when A is about M.
Are you assuming that you are still crossing the phase transition?
Yes, this is crossing the phase transition. That's
our understanding is that here you are already above the phase.
Okay, I should have picked a different picture then. Okay, later on I'll pick a different one. It makes almost no difference if I'm above. It'll look almost exactly the same. It actually, if you look at their data, well, there's not enough points. It will be very interesting to see if the slope difference at mu not equal to zero is the same as at mu equal to zero. The data suggests that it is different, and that's something that our formulas cannot explain. Okay, so this is the PCAC mass. They show this is again on the Wilson axis, and here again you have these two, you have a jump, again different slopes. This is, I didn't show you the expression, but we have expressions for this, and I can adjust some other order A parameters, they're different ones, to make this slope look roughly the same, and I get the jump, so you know, it matches. However, but not for me. For them it might, but that's again some overall factor which I'm just playing games here, I'm not fitting. I'm just showing that you have the freedom to accommodate the effects. However, when they go to non-zero mu, now the scale is different, And there's this line which fits through both points, which confuses you. There is a small jump here, it seems. But in our, if I use the same parameters in this plot as in the last plot, then I get still the same difference in the slopes on two sides, which is not apparent here. I mean, there's a much smaller difference. So there's something not understood. Okay. This is the plotting n pi squared versus the PCAC mass, the wonders of Mathematica, parametric plots. I can do all these things quickly. It's just another V. Here the parameter, really you should compare these numbers. They're supposed to be about the same, so I fixed it up. You can only get to a minimum mass. They go lower because of this metastability. If you go, this is now a non-zero, not chemical potential, mu. They've drawn this nice curve to connect, to guide the eye. This is actually now above the top of our transition. And so this really is a smooth curve. So I can make it look roughly right. Okay. All right, so that's the end. There was something I didn't say, and I think I should not go back and say. This issue of, does order A improvement still work when M quark is of order A squared? In general, it doesn't. In general, when you have M quark of order A squared, then the A squared and M quark effects compete to determine the orientation of the vacuum. That's the whole Aoki phase business. But if you are at maximal twist, okay, as defined by any of the conditions we've talked about, then the vacuum is, to within sufficient accuracy, always pointing sideways. So even though the two things compete, the result is exactly the same as in the continuum. And so because of that, the expressions indeed show order A improvement all the way down to the end of the line, or to the axis in the other case. Now, obviously, the issues you were raising will come in as you approach the end of the line, and we haven't addressed those. So we agree with this argument of Aoki and Barr with the caveat that if you run into a transition at that point, then it starts to go away. So that is a reason to work straight down. If you're working off the axis and you're approaching the top, you're getting into the Aoki regime, then the chiral condensate is strongly affected by discretization errors. And that's the only place where that's not true is the maximal twist. Okay. I think that these parity flavor of ion quantities are interesting. They give you this window into the other sector of the theory and allow you to see how big the discretization effects are. Okay, if you really want to do, with staggered, there's this big fuss about how to do proper fits. You've got to include the taste violation in the loops. And we talked about the loop masses are m quark plus a squared. Okay. Whether the same thing is true here depends on how big the a squared effects are. We've seen that they are reasonably small, 250 MeV at a of about 1 GeV. So if you get down to a of 2 GeV, it's 125, say, if we're lucky. Nevertheless, at some level, it'll matter that the pions going around the loops can have different masses. To incorporate that into chiral perturbation theory is certainly possible, but unfortunately relies going to next leading order. So that's painful, two loop. Maybe we can do some diagrams and not all. Another issue is disconnected contractions. They're all over the place in twisted mass. You can actually calculate by hand separately the connected and disconnected, for example, for the pi zero. Can you learn anything by that? Well, that would involve doing the partially quenched counterpart of this. That's another thing which a little bit of work has been done on this, but not very much. So my conclusion is that, this is a very dramatic conclusion, is twisted mass lattice QCD is a potential competitor to staggered, matching its advantages, speed particularly, without its major drawback, and merits intensive study. That sounds very bureaucratic. Okay, thank you.
You really can't go over to speed because this inherently is more complicated.
Okay.